and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, along with my nephew, Zach Hefty, on today's show. Yes, that's right. We kicked Brian out for a day, and we are going to take questions from young farmers on today's show. So we've had a number of questions come in on social media. You can also send questions in radio@agphd.com, or just give us a call throughout the show today. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd be happy to talk with you. If you've got any questions about getting started as a farmer or those types of things, it's a great time to do that. And it's one of the challenges in our industry when you look at the average age of the farmer in the United States being around 58 years old. Yeah, as a young person getting in, I remember those days of, wow, I am fresh out of high school, I'm fresh out of college, and everybody here has got all this gray hair. Are they actually interested in what I think, or trying to train me up from the bottom? Because it feels like every question I ask might be a dumb question because everybody else is going to know it. But what I found is there really are no dumb questions. And I know you hear that all the time. It sounds pretty cliche, but it's really true. When you ask questions about, hey, I don't understand why we're doing it this way, it's interesting because some farmers would say, oh, well, I can tell you exactly why, and give you five or six experiences they've had that, well, here's why. We used to do it like this, and then this happened, and we realized if we did it like this, we don't have problems anymore. But other times people are just like, yeah, I don't really know why we do it that way. And that's when you discover, oh, okay, so people are open to a better solution, a different way of doing things, or maybe trying a few different ways. So anyway, if you've got some of those questions that you say, I'm nervous about asking anybody else, you can ask us today. It's a safe space. So, Zach, where do you want to start?
Well, we just got back from Commodity Classic. It just finished up at the end of last week, and I was just wondering what your favorite part of Commodity Classic was.
Oh, I love Commodity Classic. It's a fun meeting, and this year it was in Houston, so seeing different places has been really fun, traveling to different spots around the country. I can think of quite a few different cities that I visited as part of Commodity Classic, and I really like, probably my favorite thing that I'm looking forward to as I'm traveling to Commodity Classic, I just like seeing all the people and talking to people from all over. And it was interesting. I remember talking to a farmer from Texas, and he was talking about cotton and where the cotton prices were at and what he could do differently to make more money raising cotton. And then I talked to a bunch of farmers from Ohio. It seemed like half of the state of Ohio was at this year's Commodity Classic. And those guys were talking about soils and had a lot of questions about that. And it was really fun getting into some of those conversations with farmers from a long ways from where we farm about the same issues that we're fighting here. I also talked to a lot of young people. I know my alma mater, South Dakota State University, had a bunch of kids that were down there. And it was kind of fun running into people from South Dakota that, hey, my college advisor lined up this trip and we got a bunch of kids that are down here, and just talking to them about what was interesting to them too. Because, you know, as somebody that's been there more than 20 times, you think, oh, there isn't anything new, but there really is. There's always, you know, this or that that's a little bit different, new models, new ideas, those kinds of things, new products. But for somebody that's never seen it, it's a little bit different. So let me turn the question around to you. What was your favorite part of Commodity Classic? Or maybe what are a few things that you noticed as somebody that, I think this is your first Commodity Classic, right?
Yeah, this is my first time ever being there. It was really cool to see all the people from all across the United States that kind of were there. And I met so many farmers that were just happy to be down and be warm and talk about farming in a place that, when you're downtown Houston, there's not a lot of farming that's talked about there. So it's really cool just to be able to talk farming with different people in a different place where you might not go if you were not going to Commodity Classic. So that's what I really enjoyed about going there.
You know, you talk about Houston being the fourth largest city in the United States, yet I hadn't been there before. And I've traveled a lot of places. I've been to 48 of the 50 states, everywhere in the continental United States, and I had not been to Houston yet. So when you think of the top 10 biggest cities in the country, that's the only one that I hadn't been to. And you say, well, what's Houston famous for? And I know NASA is one of those things, and I did get a chance to visit there. That was kind of neat. And that's another cool thing with Commodity Classic. They line up some really neat trips to see some of the things happening right there, and some of them are revolve around agriculture as well, you know, with the port being there and lots of trade. That's pretty cool. I didn't get to go on that trip. That was all filled up, but you got to sign up early if you want to get on the best trips at Commodity Classic.
So I'm going to switch over from Commodity Classic to maybe some young farmer questions here, but this is something that I was wondering, what's something that you know now that you wish you knew when you were starting out in your first few years of farming?
You know, everybody does farming differently. And I mean, like, just for example, say you've got four neighbors that live right across the road from each other on four sides of an intersection. I'm going to bet they all four do things differently. And I talked to some farmers that rent all of the ground that they farm, and they enjoy that. They don't tie up a whole bunch of capital on land, which is really expensive. And if they have some connections to be able to rent a bunch of ground, they think that's a good way to go. I talked to other guys that don't want to rent any ground. They want to own it. They want to, you know, do everything all the way up. I talked to other guys that are a mix. I would say most guys are a mix. They own some land, rent some land. And then, of course, you've got guys that say, well, I'm going to have livestock. That's going to be a key part of my operation, and my land is going to revolve around feeding the livestock for the most part. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I think you just have to pick your lane of what you want to do. If I could change something going back, I would have started buying land sooner. And it was too expensive at the time, and I thought, it's way overpriced. Maybe it'll get better sometime, and it hasn't. It just keeps going up all the time. So for me, if I could change one thing, that's what I would have done, is get after buying land a little bit sooner. Well, there are a lot of questions, especially if you're just getting into farming. So today's show, we're going to take questions from young farmers. But hey, if you're an older farmer and you want to offer some advice for young farmers, we're happy to take that call as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications, all without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher yielding corn for a difference you'll appreciate at harvest. Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Today is a little bit different. We get a lot of requests for this about, hey, I'm a young farmer. Can you talk about some things about getting into agriculture that you wish you would have known, or any advice that you've got for me as I try to get into farming? That's awesome. We're happy to do that today. We're going to take questions from young farmers, but also I encourage you, if you say, All right, I'm 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 100 years old, and I just want to share some of my wisdom for young farmers. We would love to hear from you as well. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show, 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always email us radio@agphd.com. All right, Zach, we got a number of questions, a lot of feedback that came back in. Why don't you shoot some of those out there?
So the first question I got from Ray, he asked, what are the best biologicals to try if you haven't used any before?
Oh, well, the cool thing with many of these biological products or natural products, as we call them, is they aren't super crop specific. So a lot of them can be used on just about any crop you want. So that's kind of a cool thing that if you say, well, I'm raising potatoes or I'm raising sugar beets or I'm raising dry beans or corn or whatever, a lot of those can be used in many different crops. I'll give you a couple of things that I think about with these naturals. First of all, I like things that are less expensive. And I would say for most farmers, they would agree with me on that of, would you rather try a $5 an acre product or a $30 an acre product that you have no idea if it's going to work or not? I'd much rather try a $5 an acre product. I think that's a good deal. And the second thing is, when you try those products, leave a check strip. So you have to figure out, okay, I'm going to buy this product. How do I best leave a check strip? So I'll give you an example. There's a talc-based natural product that you can put on your seed called NutriShield. And I love NutriShield. We've seen really nice data on that over a few years on multiple crops, and it's relatively inexpensive. But it's a talc-based product. And one thing that we learned probably 20 years ago when we started using Quikrets is if we're going to leave a check strip, you do the untreated stuff first. If you've got a talc-based or talc graphite-based product and you do that first, then you still have a little bit of that residue in the planter. And as you're planting out your quote-unquote untreated check, it's still getting treated just at a little lower rate. So do that part first. Or if you've got individual boxes, that's much easier. Then you can leave some boxes without that treatment. Just use regular talc rather than something like NutriShield and get a good comparison. So to me, I like the talc-based alternatives. NutriShield is one I would try. And then I look at PGRs. Mega Grow has been out there for almost 20 years. They've got tons and tons of data. It's like $4 or $5 an acre to try, and their return on investment has been fantastic. Use it at different timings, depending on what crop you're in. But that's one I would try just because it's been so proven. And then other naturals to think about, I guess there's just a ton of them out there. So I would look at what company they're coming from, what the price point is, what kind of yield data they've got, and start there. But always leave a check strip and try them out on a small scale first. Don't just say, well, I like it, I'm going to put it on the whole farm, even though I have no idea. I would not recommend that, because I had this question come up at Commodity Classic. I had a farmer that said, well, I've been using this product, but I'm considering taking it out because the corn price is down and I'm trying to cut my costs. And I said, well, what was your return on investment using it? And he said, well, that's the thing. The corn price was so good, I didn't do any check strips. Don't do that. Leave a check strip always, or a couple of check strips, so you can find out if stuff really pays.
So the next question, what's the best insecticide to use in furrow for rootworms?
You know, on corn, we got a lot of questions about rootworms down at Commodity Classic and have been getting a bunch of questions over the winter. If you've got a liquid system, Capture LFR is the one that's proven. There is a new product called Narisma. It costs a lot more than Capture LFR, but the data looks good and it's a different mode of action, so it might be one that a guy considers. We're going to try some of that out on our farm this year, just on a field or two, to see how it does. We'll see. A lot of times what we'll do is figure out, well, what's the package size? How many acres will each package treat? And then we'll line up acres accordingly for that. So we're going to look at Narisma this year, but overall, the one that's been on the most acres has been Capture LFR. On the dry side, if you're set up for dry, then we really like Force and Aztec. They've been the best over the years. But if liquid is how you're going to do it, I would look at Capture LFR on the majority of your acres, but I would also try some Narisma.
So if it's dry like it's been here the past few years, do you recommend a liquid fertilizer instead of a granular?
I don't really care. Doesn't matter. If you're putting dry granules in the furrow, is a liquid fertilizer going to mess things up or help things? I don't think it's going to make any difference. So whichever one's easier for you to use and whichever one's more economical.
So we posted a video about inoculant, and Joe is wondering, what's a specific one that you'd recommend?
The one we use on our farm is Ritastic, but there are tons of good inoculants out there. I would look at what your actual live bacteria count is going to be per seed. And this industry is tricky because people will talk about what's their live count per ounce in the package and compare against others, but their use rate might be wildly different. So I don't really care if you got tons of bacteria per ounce, but you only use a fraction of an ounce per seed versus multiple ounces per unit of seed. I'm worried about what's the count of bacteria on each seed. So I like Ritastic. When we started using that product probably 10 years ago, and they've obviously changed the formulation throughout the years and improved things, that was the highest rhizobia count. I think it's still the highest rhizobia count.
Would you use an inoculant on all acres or just pasture-type places?
Well, on soybean inoculant, we use it on all acres. And this kind of changed. When we were growing up, Dad would look at it as, well, I had soybeans there last year, so there's probably no point in putting inoculant out. There's probably bacteria left from last year. But the problem is, year to year, they're competing against all the billions of different microbes that are out in the soil. And the best species for producing nitrogen for a soybean plant aren't necessarily going to be the ones that survive the best out in the environment. So, in fact, I know they're not, because otherwise they'd already be there. So I think it's a really good deal to put it on every time. It only costs a couple of bucks usually. And one of the game changers for Brian and me was when we went to Brazil, and the producers there that were raising soybeans every year on some of that ground said they're still seeing a really good return on investment on inoculant in their trials each year. So that made us take a little different look at it, and sure enough, we saw the same thing.
With a warm winter in the Midwest, will this set the stage for higher corn acres if conditions hold?
Well, that's a great question, because it's a long growing season. And when conditions are warm, especially in the Western Corn Belt, there's more acres that are willing to flex from one crop to the next. So I'll give you an example. Where our dad grew up in North Central Iowa, most farmers there have a pretty set rotation. If they have a lot of livestock, they're heavy on corn no matter what. If they don't, they're often 50-50. So corn acres this year become soybean acres the next year, and they are unwilling to change that. It seems like over the years, farmers have tried to go really heavy on one crop or another, thinking, oh, the market looks much better for this crop. And more times than not, the grain markets shift during the summer. If they didn't have the prices locked in, they're disappointed they went too heavy on one crop. Or the weather went against them, and hey, it was a great soybean year, and you went heavy on corn. So I think the acres that change are the ones in the Western Corn Belt, where it's not quite as good a farm ground. The guys have to be creative to try and make money. And if it's warm and dry, often they do plant a little bit more corn. But where this market's at right now, I don't know. I think a lot of guys are going to go with their normal rotation and take their chances. Yeah, lots of questions around that. And I would say this. If I'm a young farmer and you're all on your own, you got to spread your risk out. And putting it all into one crop is pretty risky unless you lock in what you're going to get on the back end. We'll talk more about that and take more questions from young farmers coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com. For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car, steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
Thanks for joining us today on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking questions from young farmers, and oh my goodness, when I was a younger farmer, I had a ton of questions. I still have a lot of questions, and I'm in my 50s, and by the way, I am still considered a younger farmer because the average age of the farmer is 58, and I'm still under that. So I would say this, though. You know, as you get into farming, there are a lot of things that change. The weather's different every year. Commodity prices are different. Interest rates are different. Rules are different. Government programs are different. I mean, it's just a sea of constant change. So you're going to have questions as you go. One of the biggest tips I'd have, and I get asked all the time, hey, I'm a young farmer. What would be some of the things you wish you could do different or you wish you knew when you got started? Build a network of advisors for yourself. Get a great accountant that you're working with. Get a great lawyer that you're working with. Get a great banker that you're working with. Get some older farmers that are not your parents, not your relatives. Maybe it's somebody from a little bit further away to take you under their wing as well and say, hey, I want to bounce ideas off somebody. I want to learn from you. And just see what you can do. And maybe you trade out a few things. Maybe you say, you know what, I'm willing to do a few things for you on your farm to make that happen. Or maybe you just find an organization that has a lot of people that want to be mentors. There are definitely those organizations out there. You join one of the commodity groups or join a local cattlemen's association or whatever it is. So you just get a lot of more experienced farmers around you that are willing to share with you. You just build relationships that way. I think that is really key in farming because there are so many different ways to do this and so many different ways to be successful. Why would you not talk to people that have been doing it for 30 or 40 years, made it through the ups and downs of farming successfully, and have the scars to prove it? My dad always told me the difference between farmers that are successful and those that are not successful is the size of your mistakes. if you talk to farmers who have been around for a long time, they're going to tell you, hey, yep, that's a cool idea. Try it on a few acres first. And that way you don't go broke. So anyway, just keep those things in mind. Build a network of people around you to help you along the way. All right, Zach, we got some more questions that came in. Let's have the next one.
Next one's from Jordan. Have you applied foliar urea in drought conditions to feed through the leaf, and how did it work out?
Well, the idea of drought is an interesting one because it's so different depending on where you're at. So we're in South Dakota, and oftentimes drought means we get no rain for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that during the growing season. If that was the case, I would not be applying any foliar fertilizer because I'm not throwing good money after bad. Our crop is a disaster. I'm not going to spend any more money on it. But most of the time when we hear a drought, that just means, you know what, we're getting less moisture than normal, but we're still getting some. And if we are still getting some, and I've got decent soil that I built up, so I'm hanging in there, could you do something foliar? Absolutely, you could. Typically, if we're doing foliar urea, we're blending urea down to about a 21% solution. A lot of times we'll also, even at that, we might add more water to safen it just a little bit more and get a little bit more gallons that we're going to put out there to spread it out more. Generally, we're not using too many gallons, so we're keeping our foliars, you know, lower use rates, maybe a few gallons of fertilizer per acre if we're spraying it out with the sprayer. If you're doing it through an irrigation system, whole different story, of course, but I don't think that's the question. So have we done it before? Yep. Did we have great luck with it? You know what? It worked in that case, but I'll say this with foliars, every year is different. And if you said, hey, you know what? It's okay growing conditions now. I'm going to do a foliar, and then you get super hot and super dry for the next few weeks, you may not get any gain out of that. So it really depends. I would say, again, do some experimentation on your own farm and make your decisions for your growing area.
Next question is from Aaron. Decomposition products to spray on my cover crop in the spring with my burn down. Do you have any?
Okay, spring burn down, adding in something to help break down residue. You know, we get a lot of questions around breaking down residue. It all starts with the combine. It starts with what size of corn stalks, for example, that you have left. And if you've got a chopping corn head and the size of those pieces is 4 to 6 inches, they're going to break down a lot faster than if the size of those pieces is 4 to 6 feet. So that makes a difference. If you're doing no tillage, the couple of things that I would suggest, you could certainly put some amount of nitrogen on the surface. Often we're doing that with our pre-emerge herbicide, so we get a little bit of N out there because the bacteria that are going to break down the carbon in the high carbon residue, they need some nitrogen to be able to do it. So by providing a little nitrogen, they don't have to rob it from my crop. That would be one thing. As far as natural products, we use a product called Decomp. It's been a nice one, but a lot of these decomposition products aren't the best products to handle. Sometimes they can be thick, sometimes living microbes. We've used a lot of different products where it's blown the lid off the jug because they're growing inside the tank all the time. So that would be something I'd ask about as I'm getting those products. And often if I pick them up, I'm going to try and use them right away just to be on the safe side. But I like Decomp. It's a nice product for that. The earlier you can get it out there so you've got more time for it to work, the better.
Next question is from Stefan. Is abscisic acid good to the corn plant to spray, and when would you do it?
All right, abscisic acid. It's often abbreviated ABA, and it's thought of as a stress hormone most of the time in crop production. It's something that's going to influence seed dormancy. It's also something that, well, you just look at the word abscission. What does that mean? Abscission means to cut off. And a lot of times what that means is leaves. It's going to be involved in leaf drop and those kinds of things. So it's thought of as a stress hormone. So we have not been using abscisic acid for trying to reach higher yields. In fact, we've been generally overloading the plant with gibberellic acid early in the season if we want taller plants and more tonnage. We've been overloading the plant with cytokinins and IBA, indolobutyric acid, in season to try to influence more flower set or more root growth or whatever we're trying to do. And abscisic acid has been one that, as we're overloading with these others, we're trying to offset any balance that might be happening with, oh, there's stress, I better produce abscisic acid. We're just trying to overload them with what we would call more of the good guys to try to influence yield more. So no, we have not used that in plant production.
Next question is from Mike. Does using a product like Rise Up on grass hay make the hay grow faster or just increase yield?
Okay, gibberellic acid is something that plants will produce naturally. It's a hormone that influences shoot elongation. So we'll use that in our pastures. We'll use that in silage production. And what we'll see is the early in the growing season or late in the growing season, in the case of pasture, either way, in those cool times, plants are not producing much gibberellic acid in the root system, and they can't push it up in through the vegetative growth. They just aren't growing very fast. So by adding gibberellic acid, it looks like much faster growth. I don't know if it's necessarily more nodes that are going to be produced, just more longer nodes. So we just get more tonnage. And we don't normally see an impact on grain yield, but we do see more tonnage and more height on the plants. Also, if you put gibberellic acid on your lawn, for example, it's going to have to be mowed much more often. And it's going to look a little bit yellow if you don't add enough fertilizer, because as that plant is putting on more plant growth, but its root system in cool soils is still not taking in that many nutrients, getting a boost to nutrition can really help. Otherwise, the plant's going to look a little bit pale, even though it's still fine. So just something to kind of be aware of if you're using gibberellic acid. And yeah, Rise Up Smart Grass, I think it's going to be called Proliant PGR. Now this year, they're rebranding that product. Good product. It's been the best gibberellic acid source that we've found. Taking questions from young farmers on today's program, and also if you're an older farmer that just wants to share some advice, we would love to hear from you too. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe with Heads Up seed treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket. Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're taking questions from young farmers or advice for young farmers, depending on which side of that coin you're on. And I've got my nephew Zach Hefty here today asking some questions that have been coming in from young farmers. Go ahead, Zach.
So this one is from Farmhand. He asks, why do people spray liquid fertilizer on wheat more than granular?
Well, it depends on a lot of things there. And these are questions that need to be asked. And I talked about it to start the show. Let's just say that you're farming with your parents and they say, all right, we're going to go spray some liquid fertilizer on wheat. Just asking the question, okay, why do we do liquid instead of dry, would be a good idea. Maybe they say, well, we don't have a dry fertilizer spreader, so spraying it is the only way we can apply it ourselves. That could very well be the case. Another thing could be, well, we're going to put it on in crop. We want liquid. We're trying to do a foliar, and we want it to get right on the leaf foliage and get into the plant and get an immediate impact rather than dry fertilizer that needs more moisture to break down, to wash the fertilizer off the pellet, and then enough moisture to get the fertilizer into the plant. It's just a longer response time. My guess is that's probably the case, that you're just in a drier area. You don't get enough moisture after you put that fertilizer out. So you're seeing guys use liquid fertilizer for that reason, that it's going to be available a little bit quicker. The other alternative to that, though, is to do the fertilizer application earlier. For example, I know a lot of farmers in our area that use dry fertilizer for wheat, and they'll put it out at planting, or they'll put it out a few weeks ahead of planting just to give it more time to catch some moisture, or they put it out in the fall so they've got more time to catch snow or rain or whatever between then and spring when their crop's going to need it. I will say this, though. One reason that a lot of farmers do use liquid in wheat is they like having nitrogen available late in the season because that helps protein. And in season in wheat, you're not guaranteed you're going to get the next rain. So liquid is a good way to go for that. So that could be a couple of reasons why.
Got this other one in, wondering your thoughts. Your thoughts on prefix plus first rate as a pre in soybeans.
Prefix plus first rate. So prefix would be metolachlor or dual plus fumescifen, Flexstar. So dual and Flexstar, also adding in first rate. And that would be an ALS-type herbicide. You know, it depends on what your weed spectrum is. For me, I look at a couple of things. I don't want to use things that I can use post-emerge, pre-emerge. So all three of those active ingredients can be used post-emerge in soybeans. So if I use them all pre, I can only use them one time. Other than the metolachlor, you could use twice. But you can only use Flexstar one time. You can only use First Rate one time. Why would I take those really good post-emerge options off the table? Now, if you said, okay, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to spray Liberty and Enlist One in Enlist soybeans post-emerge, okay, I get it. You want those out there now because they have a little bit of residual, and then you're going to come back later. I could understand that, but I would say this. The best weed control we've ever seen in soybeans has been using R3 pre's, which would be one of the PPOs, namely Valor Authority, plus Metribuzin, plus one of the yellows, Prowl or Trifluralin. And Metribuzin, the PPOs, and the yellows have to be used pre. So use those pre-emerge. Otherwise, you don't get to use them post. So I'd use those pre. Save those other good options for post-emerge use. I think you'll like it better.
Got this question in from Dale. Who are good suppliers of soil sample probes?
Well, that's a good question. We have had a hard time finding good soil probes. I'll be honest, I agree with you that they are hard to find sometimes, and especially because you want a stainless steel probe. If you get just a steel probe, and I know online you can find for $30 to $40, you can find steel probes, but they rust. And then all of a sudden, what's rust? Well, that's iron. And you're going to have your soil test thrown off by whatever materials are on that probe, and it's not going to last very long because you're probing into moist soils. You're not going to get them cleaned perfectly every time, and especially the inside of the tube, and you're just going to have problems. So get a stainless steel probe. They're probably going to cost you $120 to $150 bucks. I know Gempler's has got them. If you come to any of our Ag PhD events, we always buy up a bunch of soil probes before the event because people are always asking and they have trouble finding them. So we say, fine, we'll just have some here. Same as sweep nets. I don't know why. Sweep nets should be really easy to find. But a lot of times guys say, I just didn't even see any in my local hardware store. We often have sweep nets at our events too. So if you come to one of our events, like our upcoming Scouting and Scholarships event, in June or Ag PhD Field Day in July, you could probably find probes or sweep nets there. But otherwise, Gempler's would be a place online you could find them.
Got this question from Clint. He asked, I'm growing wheat for the first time in central Illinois on some timber river bottom ground. Have a great stand and looks great, according to the seed guy. What are some things I can do to really push the limits with it to maximize yield?
Well, having a great stand is the absolute way you want to start because crop canopy is going to be your best weed control in season. So if you can get that up and growing, that's a good deal. For me, I just want to do an awesome job on weeds, insects, and diseases. I want to spray. I want to be preventative. I don't want to be curative with any of those things. So I'm going to spray fungicides. Probably in Illinois, you're going to have some disease pressure because you get moisture. I would spray fungicide three times. I'd use it at herbicide timing, which is going to be coming up here next month. I would spray it again at flag leaf, which is the most important fungicide timing. And then I would spray it a couple of weeks later when you're at about 10 or 15% flowering, when that heads out, to give yourself some head scab protection. So three shots of fungicide would be a big deal. I would scout every time a few days before I'm going to spray, look for insects. If you see insects, add insecticide in there. We found the pyrethroids mix pretty well with herbicides and fungicides. So we're often using on our farm bifenthrin, but you could use just a second generation pyrethroid as well, something like Warrior, Mustang Max, or similar products. And then I guess, you know, the other thing is just looking at fertility. We do a lot of plant tissue testing. We'll tissue test every week just to see, is the crop getting the nutrients that it needs? If you see you're running short on things, you could always try to apply. In Illinois, I would bet you'd have a decent return on investment if you could act quickly. In South Dakota, we just aren't guaranteed we're going to get rain, maybe for a month or two after application. And if we don't get rain, foliar fungicides or foliar fertilizer, excuse me, don't work so well out here. So that would be something that you could look at as a way to push things. And then if that crop is just starting to green up and it looks like you got a good stand, I would get micronutrients out there early. With whatever pass you're coming on next, I would use a micronutrient blend like a micro 500 or micro 1000 from Agro Liquid. We've had really good luck with those products. And getting those micros in early on wheat really makes a difference. Like, for example, boron. If you run short of boron in corn, what we'll see is tip back. So the end of the ear, the top end of the ear, you'll see kernels just not really develop there. In wheat, if you run short of boron, you're going to see the bottom of the wheat head. Those kernels are going to abort or just not fill in. So if you notice some of that, you knew you were short on boron, but there are a bunch of different micros that you're going to need. Manganese, copper, and boron are going to be super important in wheat, but you always want to make sure you got availability of all the essential nutrients. So for me, that would be one thing a little bit different than most farmers do. Just make sure you got some micros out there early, and then don't run short on nitrogen during the season.
On our farm or any farm, if you're looking at your variety or hybrid trials, you're trying out some new ones, what are you looking for obviously outside of yield in these trials?
Well, I want to spread my maturities out. I want to get to know some things that are just a little out of my maturity zone, because you never know when you're going to plant early or you're going to plant late. It all depends on the weather and the soil conditions. But I'm really looking at what kind of structure our soybean plants have. I want something that's going to have an upright structure that's not going to lay over. On corn, I'm really looking at what's going to have a great root system, because we have a lot of rootworm pressure in our area, and also we get a lot of wind. So I want to make sure I've got a good root and stock under whatever I'm growing. So definitely looking at those plant characteristics and, of course, yield. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs, with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Officer Jones calling for backup.
10-4. Location?
Kraber back 40. Looks like we've got Palmer amaranth, kochia, some common water hemp.
Resistant weeds. Copy that. You'll need a good tank mix partner. I'm sending Tough 5EC.
Come out with your hands up!
Guys, we're surrounded.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belgium Crop Protection.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer, or visit johndeere.com/face.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, taking questions from young farmers and, of course, advice from older farmers as well. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. I got my nephew Zach with me today. Zach, go ahead, take next question.
One of my friends from college is going back to the farm, and he's really wondering about futures markets. And one of the questions he had was, a farmer can sell their grain to a wide variety of different places with many options. How can you get comfortable with it as a young farmer?
Well, a couple of things here. One of the things that that I had the blessing of learning when I was young was about some of these commodity markets. So we raised, we had a farrow to finish hog operation. We had a cow-calf operation. And then as I got older, my dad got busier with other stuff. We got out of the farrowing operation of hogs. So we quit breeding hogs and having little babies, and we started buying feeder pigs. And so at a young age, my dad had, he really had a passion for livestock, and he shared a lot of his stories and a lot of his tips that he'd picked up over the years with me. And so I really got into raising hogs, and that turned out to be a cool thing, because I would go with my dad to the sales. He would let me pick out the pigs that we were going to buy, and he'd say, okay, why do you like this pen of pigs? What do you see? This kind of thing. And it just helped me develop an eye for that and a love for that. So I started watching the markets every day. And back in those days, we had farm broadcasters on TV that we don't have so many of anymore. And so I was watching the markets literally every day. And I remember talking to my dad about the futures market, because he would talk about hedging. Oh, I'm going to hedge so I make sure I don't lose money on these pigs. And so I would talk to him about that, and I'd go along with him to a commodities broker's office and hear those conversations. And that was really cool. I didn't fully understand it. But one of the things I did understand, because when I started thinking I was smart, and I said, you know, Dad, I think the market's going up. I think we should do this. And he'd say, really? So right now, what you're telling me is you think the price is low, so you would like to buy now, and you think it's going to go up so you can sell later when it's higher. I said, yep, I think we should buy now. And he'd say, if you buy now, who are you buying from? And I said, I don't know. It's just the market, Dad. I just bought a contract out there on the market. He goes, no, you bought the contract from a person. And there's a person on the other end that thinks the exact opposite of you. That person thinks the market's really high right now. It's going to go down. I'm going to sell now. And he's like, so how confident are you that you're right and that person who might have been doing this for 30 years is wrong? That person might have lots of industry connections. That person might have a million times more pigs than you've got. Do you think you're right, or you think that guy's right? I'm like, ooh, I don't know. I've got a lot less confidence about my opinion right now. He goes, yeah, exactly. You got to think about that, that there's somebody on the other end that thinks it's going the opposite way every time. What I would say is one of the people that you want to have on your team is a good commodities broker, and you want to find somebody that will educate you along the way and help you out with things. So the other thing that I would say is this, I would get in on one contract. So go in, talk to them and say, okay, I'm going to have 50,000 bushels of corn. One contract's 5,000 bushels. I'm going to hedge 5,000 bushels one way or the other, or I'm going to buy an option on 5,000 bushels one way or the other. If you're wrong, well, you're going to get less money for your grain, but you still have the grain, right? So you deliver the grain, you get $4 instead of $5, or you get $3 instead of $4. And you know what? It's a $5,000 loss, but hey, you learned a lot of lessons along the way. My dad told me that you always learn the most lessons when you have your own money on the line. And man, was he right. It was one thing. I took a lot of commodity classes coming up because I really thought this was something I wanted to do. And I learned a lot. But as soon as I had my own money on the line, I learned a lot more really fast. So start small, go visit with a commodity broker, and maybe visit with a few different ones and see what you learn and what kind of advice you get so you can make your own decisions.
Another one kind of along the same lines is, how do you decide to market your crop with futures rather than selling it to the elevator right as you're harvesting it?
Well, you're making a choice either way. And a lot of times people say, well, no, I'm just going to harvest it, then I'll see what the prices are. No, what you're saying is no to today's market offer. Let's just say for corn, today's market offer is $4. If you're not selling it, if you're not hedging it in some way, price protecting what you're going to raise, then you're just gambling. You're gambling that, oh, no, it's going to be better. And people say, no, I'm gambling if I get in the futures market. No, you're gambling either way, because every day you have a choice. Do you want to get in or not? And you may say, well, no, I don't want to do that. That's fine. You made a choice. So by not making a choice, you have made a choice. What I look at is if I'm going to sell the grain and deliver it to a local entity, that's going to happen anyway. If I lock myself in on one, say it's the local elevator that's 5 miles down the road, it's the closest place. okay, that's fine. And that's where you would like to haul because it's the easiest for you to get to and you know the people there and all that stuff. That's cool. But when you're going to lock in a price with them in forward contract, you're not only locking in the price, you're locking in the basis. That's the difference between the futures market and what your local market is. That changes. So what I would suggest for young farmers is start tracking the basis in your area. So every day, check what the grain price is, look at what the futures price is, write those two things down, and then see what your basis is. So for example, say that the Board of Trade price for November soybeans is $10 and your local elevator will forward contract with you for $9. Well, $10 minus $9 is a negative $1 basis. So that's what their basis is. And then watch that throughout the season. Because what you're going to see is they may start out at negative $1 on the basis, but during the year, they might be negative 50 cents at some times and negative $1.50 at other times. That's going to help you know, okay, I like where the Board of Trade price is at, but where's my basis at? And if I see, ooh, the basis is really wide, they're taking a lot of margin here, I'm going to wait. This isn't a good time for me to sell. So you got a couple different things that you got to look at when you're deciding on those things. And the other thing is, let's say you lock in at that elevator that's 5 miles down the road. Did you even check the price of the elevator 20 miles away? I think it's really important to look at multiple prices, see what's going on, track their basis too, and see, oh, okay, here's the best time to go here. Here's the best time to go over there. And if you're always buying from the same supplier, if you're always, selling your grain at the same place, that's not all bad. There are some good things about that. And sometimes, hey, they're trying to fill a train. They call you first because you're a good, loyal customer and they give you the best deal. I totally get that. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't check around just to see where things are at to make sure you're being treated fair.
Switching over to fungicides, what is the best time to apply fungicide to control frog eye leaf spot? And what product fungicide group would provide the best mode of action to control this disease?
Well, frog eye leaf spot's a big issue in soybeans, and especially as you go further south, but we even see it up here in the north. It's one that blows up each year with the winds. So the one mode of action that doesn't work very well is strobilurins. So Quadris, Headline, there's known frog eye resistance to that. So for me, I would use a product like Lucento, for example. It has a triazole and an SDHI. That way you have the other two best modes of action, and now you're preventing disease resistance. Of course, you could use a three mode of action product too. They just cost a little more.
What are the best management?
Timing. And then the other thing is timing. You want to be ahead of the disease. Oftentimes in our area, we're spraying at about full bloom to first pod, and we do pretty good we get a good 3 weeks of protection. But guys in the south are spraying every 3 weeks, probably starting around the 1st of July. It just depends on where you're at. So the question's going to change a little bit. If you're further south, you're probably going to be spraying a lot earlier than we are in the north.
What are the best management strategies to control disease, or a couple of them?
Well, the biggest thing with disease is you've got to understand the disease triangle. So first of all, you've got to have the pathogen, you have to have a host crop, and you have to have the right environment. So with disease, a lot of times you have diseases like northern corn leaf blight that really thrives on leaf wetness happening for 6 hours or more in a row. Well, if you get dew that sets in at 10 p.m., and it's going to stay on there till 8 a.m. the next day, that's 10 hours of leaf wetness. So if you know you've got those kind of conditions, you got a susceptible corn hybrid, and you've had northern corn leaf blight in the past, yeah, it's time to treat. And you want to be out in front of those diseases, because once you see disease show up, there's really not much you can do. I know you'll hear about, oh, some fungicides have curative abilities. Not much. You've got to be out there in front. It's kind of like you. If you say, well, we're going to prevent a common cold, how do you do it? Not after the cold starts. You have to do all the good things and the right things beforehand. Well, had a fun show today talking about questions from young farmers. Really enjoyed having my nephew Zach on here as well. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.